Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. We're continuing the Star Trek Discovery coverage. We are up to episode 8 of season 1. It's called Sivus Pacem Parabellum. And that means, if you want peace, prepare for war. It's apparently a Latin phrase written by Kirsten Bayer. Story goes to Kirsten Bayer. Directed by John Scott, aired on November 5th, 2017. In this episode, the USS Discovery is tasked with a high-priority mission to the planet Pavo and learns the science behind the Klingons' cloaking technology. As always, with Discovery, we're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm living every moment of my life in fear that this show is only going to be okay for the rest of the season.
I don't really have a lot to lead in with this episode. I don't have a lot to discuss. We're up to episode 8. I guess we'll start there. We only have one episode left before the break comes, right? And I see where the break is going to come on, I think. I see how they're going to get to us to a break point that would feel like it's a kind of a cliffhanger.
However, everybody's just going to call time out at the end of the war at the end of the next episode.
Yeah. And we'll get there eventually, but I guess that's as good of a place as any to really leave this. I'm going to play an audio clip, and then me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down Sivus Pacem Parabellum.
There's nothing here for me now. The Batak my people now follow has no honor. It is because of Cole I am alone. I had like-minded brothers and sisters. Even the one chosen by Lord Dukuvma to be his successor. But he was chased away. Forever gone. Everyone is gone. My vessel is in a nearby hangar. Kalish willing, we will use it to both escape with our lives. And you will guarantee me safe passage onto your ship.
My ship?
Discovery. I know which shuttle delivered you to the trap on Concrete 4.
Why should I trust you?
Because we need each other, Admiral.
And what other option do you have?
All right, Clay, I was telling you before we started recording, and I'll tell the audience here, I have a baby sick with croup at home, so I got about 2 hours of sleep last night. However, I need you to tell me, does this episode, am I just overtired, or did this episode basically amount to a whole bunch of misdirection that I'm not sure what the point of any of it was?
I was going to ask you basically the same thing. No, I kind of, at the end of it, didn't really know what the hell had just happened.
I spent the entire, except for the last 2 minutes, thinking Saru was taken over by the aliens.
Yeah, me too. It was kind of, you know, I like the way it started. I still don't understand what the military power level of the Discovery is, because it seems like they can get places quickly, but when they get there, they're just kind of like another ship.
Yeah, yeah. I even think they're overpowered in some ways. For being a science vessel, they seem to do a lot of, you know, they're out there taking photon torpedoes for other ships.
Right, sort of, right.
It's very unclear what their power level is.
Yeah, and I mean, there were like a shitload of Klingon ships, I guess. I didn't think that battle scene was very well shot. I thought it was very confusing to watch. But like, what was their plan? I mean, like, were they just, could they, even in that scene, could they not shoot the ships because they were cloaked? Or, like, I couldn't figure out why they were being so ineffective.
Yeah,
was going on.
The Klingons were cloaked. I don't know what the plan was, because they can't get that other ship to jump like they can. So
right.
He's like, does your warp drive work? And the guy says no. And he's like, well, you're fucked. So we'll try to take some hits for you. One gets through and it blows up the ship. And then they just get out of there. And I don't really understand what the game plan was. There wasn't like a mass transport evacuation or anything like that.
Yeah, I feel like in most other shows, it's usually like, oh, we managed to transport 3/4 of the crew, but we still lost 10 people or one of those things. You know? Yeah. In this one, it's just no, they're fucked. They just get one. They get hit with one torpedo and they blow up. and then they're like, well, let's get out of here. I guess there's nothing left we can do here. It's like I don't know. It was that scene was kind of like the back and forth he was having with the guy who was supposed to be firing. I couldn't figure out if it was because maybe this is, I don't know, maybe I just wasn't watching it correctly or something, but I couldn't figure out if the problem was that he was having a problem or if it was because the ships were cloaked, because they talk about that there's a problem with hitting the ships, but then the end of that discussion turns into the fact that they can't, the Klingons can't shoot while they're cloaked.
Right.
So, like, I was having trouble following where, like, the line of energy was going here, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you think that since the Klingon ships outnumber them, why are they cloaked at this point? Why don't they just open fire on the two ships that are sort of sitting around by them? Yeah.
So that was that. And then he gives the comm to a robot, which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's another anachronistic technology thing, I guess. But, like, giving the comm to Data, I feel like, was a huge deal when they did it. So just, you know, just casually handing it off to a robot that we don't know anything about is kind of interesting.
But, I guess we don't know if that person's really a robot. I guess
that's true.
It's never been
that's
confirmed. True. They might just look like the Tin Man from Wizard of Oz, but not actually. They might actually have a heart at the same time.
That's a good point. I might be being prejudiced towards whatever race that person is.
But you might just be sort of bearing a negative energy towards an episode that I didn't think was particularly good. And this was, you know, we had fun with the last episode because we felt that it kind of broke out of the serialization aspect that Discovery's been trying to do and not particularly doing very well.
Yeah.
This episode to me felt like it went totally whole hog back into that with an additional kind of a weird TOS-y callback episode to Errand of Mercy, where Errand of Mercy is the original series episode where the Federation meets the Klingons at planet Organia or whatever. It's the very first appearance of the Klingons. And the humans and Klingons are having their fights. You know, they're on this sort of planet that they see as primitive, and the Federation is trying to protect these people, and the Klingons are trying to invade the planet. And then the twist at the end of the episode is the people actually are all powerful, and they can stop whatever is going on. So they threaten both sides with, like, mutual destruction, and they make the Federation and the Klingons have a peace treaty. And that's the whole point of Errand of Mercy. Mm-hmm. This felt very similar in a way that I feel like they're calling back to it in some way, because going into the next episode, we end this one with, oh, these people don't understand. They're just trying to mediate a truce between us because that's their whole thing. I don't know. It just felt like it was I spent this entire episode unsure of what was going on and whether or not the episode wanted me to be confused about what was happening.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I thought after that opening scene, I thought it was fine. Like the getting into the thing on the planet was fine. It, you know, the captain's the log entry always, like we said last week, is always helps to kind of ground you as to what's going on. But even there, like the concept of what they were doing was so vague. Like I mean, I understand that they were trying to use the whatever that creature was, the sound that was being produced to amplify something on their end that's going to help them identify Klingon cloaked ships.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, even that, I don't know how they're going to mobilize that. Or, like, even that was kind of vague. I'm like, all right, whatever, that's fine. Sure, Star Trek science, whatever.
Yeah, Star Trek science,
And, you know, there was a couple of good things. Like, they kind of got into a bit of an ethical debate about protocol, which I appreciate. That's a very Star Trek thing to do.
Yeah, they don't call it the Prime Directive yet, really.
Yeah.
They call it something one, prerogative one or something like that. I can't really remember.
And I thought there was a nice fake out when Saru has Tyler put his hand on that rock and he says, your intentions are false. I thought that was going to be the
Vok reveal.
So, or something along that line, but it wasn't. But yeah, the whole thing with those creatures, I guess they only have one effect for amorphous creatures because it's the same, looks like the same effect they use for the spore drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which can also they can transport you magically too?
Yep.
Why even have them do that? Why don't you just, I don't know, that's details, but
it felt very that alien felt very high fantasy to me in a lot of ways. Like it felt very Game of Thrones-y, Lord of the Rings kind of stuff, like a mystical sort of fairy dust creature that's in the woods. And like you know, you go up and talk to it, you can't quite understand. And then Saru sticks his hand in it and we get the rest of the episode.
Yeah, there's an episode of Doctor Who, actually, that they have a not exactly like that, but it's a really, really good episode where it's these microscopic mites, basically, that live in, excuse me if I get the details wrong, but they live in the shadows or something, and if the shadow falls over you, they eat you, but then, like, there's a certain point where they realize that they inhabit the entire planet, but you can't see them because they're so tiny. Anyway, go watch that episode. It's really good.
Midichlorians, I think.
It reminded me of that a little bit, but, like, a happy version of that, where they don't kill you. It's just, like, they make you super happy.
Right.
And, yeah, it was, I didn't even realize until the end, I mean, maybe this is the nature of what a misdirect is, but like when they got to the end and they had that scene, which I thought was actually pretty good, where what's his name?
Saru.
Saru.
Yeah.
Where Saru is talking about never having a moment free of fear, and then these things somehow managed to give him that. I'm not exactly sure how. I didn't realize that was going to be a misdirect, and he wasn't like controlled by them. He was just relieved personally to a point where he's like, you know what, if we never leave this place, we don't have to ever deal with anything bad, or if we, you know, if completing our mission won't bring the war here, and then, you know, that'll be great. It'll still be beautiful here. I don't know if that was super it just kind of came off as confusing, and like the
turn is so quick. Like the turn happens. He doesn't have a moment's reflection about what he's doing. They play it as though he has been turned by these things. And the end of the episode reveals that he wasn't turned. He's just the equalization process or whatever these aliens do caused him to calm down a little bit, basically.
Yeah.
And so he was happy to stay there on the planet, as you were saying. Which I guess brings more into question his fitness as a Starfleet officer. Like, if he can be so easily, persuaded to do something like that, it just felt very. It felt like they were intentionally trying to misdirect me, but I thought that the episode and the script would have been more interesting if it wasn't about the misdirect. If it was about Saru as a character wanting to stay on this planet.
Yeah, just because, I mean, otherwise, everything that he does before that just seems really. Like the line of action doesn't really lead you to the point that they ended at. It feels very disjointed, and you keep waiting to figure out why he's acting the way he's doing, or like what the malicious influence on him is, but it never comes. So then the stuff that he's doing doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like it would have been way more interesting just to have him be very clear about what he was doing.
Right. And it's not like, you know, if Saru is being malicious and he doesn't want them to communicate with Discovery, that makes sense to me. It doesn't make a lot of sense if he's just happy there. Why wouldn't they allow them to contact Discovery and he can just be like, you know what, I want to stay on this planet. I retire, basically. We've seen so many episodes where characters do that.
Yeah.
Like,
or why not have the things affect all three of them?
Right.
And then you can have them, because clearly they all three have different viewpoints about the what the future holds, to the point where Tyler is even like, you know what? What if we don't complete this mission and the war never ends, and then we can kiss whenever we want?
What did you think of that scene between? I thought the script really let down two pretty good performances from them.
That sequence felt very fan fiction-y to me.
Yeah, that
where it's like, what if we use the needs of the many speech, but like romantically?
Right.
Somebody took that out of like Kirk and Spock slash fiction and just put two other characters in it.
Yeah, I didn't. That relationship just isn't. It's not working for me. Like we've talked about the problems of the show so far, and it's just. I thought that this episode really brings those problems into focus of just this like hyper paced thing that's going on that they're not particularly interested in revealing. And now we're already, apparently they're in a relationship at this point, I guess.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. It's never been explained.
We don't spend any time with them.
Right.
So I don't know what excuse me. I don't know what the status of their thing is, if they're just sort of like, you know, playing footsie under the table, or if they're, you know, sleeping together.
Right, yeah. And, we get another in the serialization arc here, we get a scene with Stamets, a couple scenes with Stamets and Cadet Tilly, where Stamets is now full transistor or something. He can just plug himself into the drive, and he's got his little robot arms, and he moves and everything. It's starting to show more serious side effects for Stamets. And is there any way he's not being replaced by another universe version of himself or something like that? Like
I don't know.
He claims to see that he, in some times when he uses the drive, everything is okay. And other times it's like he doesn't know anything. He knows something else completely different. And that seems to me to be implying multiple universes. Maybe this is just because I'm stuck on this idea because I've thought this is what the drive was doing since the sort of start of it. But I don't know. They don't do anything with that storyline. It's more just about the fact that they're really sort of hammering home the point that something is wrong with Stamets.
Yeah, they just kind of move the piece forward a little bit, but don't, I mean, not super significantly. You know, I hadn't even thought about that, about being replaced with it, but I mean, that makes sense. Cause I mean, I would have to go back and watch it specifically, but I think the episode where they do the mirror gag, the way he looks in that mirror is very similar to the way he looks, like just the way he holds himself.
Yeah.
When he's kind of, you know, in his, pot smoking mode.
Oh,
after
right.
He comes comes out of the machine where he's all, you know, juiced up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that is definitely a possibility, I think. I mean, it would be, you know, it's really interesting to have this show. I feel like that would be a driving point in a season arc sort of thing, but it's just sort of like a tertiary plot point.
Yeah, right. I mean,
like crossing over into an alternate universe back and forth at like feels like it should be a big deal. Like, I mean, maybe that's not what they're doing. We could just be completely wrong.
Yeah, but yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, and I don't know about you, but I did not like the Klingons in this episode at all. I'm not sure why. Just something, they just bugged me. From top to bottom.
I mean, from a script point of view, I did not like the Klingon stuff because I was never sure where I stood with the character. I thought that I knew where I was, and then it would constantly flip it back and forth. And then at the end, they're like, "Oh shit, we're out of runtime. How about you just have Kor know everything for no particular reason?"
Yeah, that really confused me.
And you just say that what the Admiral got away? I thought she was dead. I was like, oh, this is a plot to escape. She's going to pretend to kill her and then she'll escape with her. No, she's there and she told Kor that, oh, she got away from me. And then wait a minute. No, it's like, I don't understand any of the steps that are going on.
She was telling him, she was explaining why she killed her. She was explaining that she got my blade and she tried to escape. That's why when he came, I think when he came upon them in the hallway, she had to beat the shit out of her.
Right. But then after that, when they're having their final scene. So at that point, I'm like, oh, she actually killed the Admiral when she drops her in the dead body room. And she's like, oh,
what's up with the dead body room? Why does she go in there and like all her friends are in there?
Right.
And also, why are we supposed to care about those Klingons that we've never seen?
Right. I
don't know.
I see that scene is supposed to tell the viewer, in my opinion, that she's actually against Kor for real in this. Like, it's not a sort of like double entendre flip thing that she's trying to do on the Admiral, which is what I thought it was. But then when she meets with Kor at the very end, I feel like I remember them having a conversation where she discussed that the Admiral got away, and he was like, oh, don't worry, there'll be more prisoners for you to interrogate in the future.
That was the one scene I'm talking about. I was under the impression that what she was doing in that scene was explaining why she killed the Admiral.
Okay, okay.
So in that scene, she's explaining that the Admiral stole her knife and, you know, tried to get away. And then maybe I'm
is the Admiral dead?
What she actually says. I don't know. That's the one thing I don't know. I assumed that they kept showing her on the ground. I assumed that they were going to have her open her eyes at some point. Another thing there is like capturing a Starfleet Admiral is a big deal.
Yeah.
He should be very mad. even if he doesn't realize that she's pulling some plot on him or whatever. If she kills his star prisoner, I feel like that should be a bigger deal than, oh, well, there's plenty more prisoners.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like
yeah,
that's, right. that's, there's plenty more prisoners, but they're not all going to be, if any, admirals of your enemy.
Right. You had Tyler for 6 months or whatever, but he's not really, he doesn't know anything about this overall war effort.
Yeah.
I was very confused by the Klingon stuff. I don't know. And again, I don't know. My confusion is a problem to me because I don't know if the script is trying to confuse me or if it's just doing a bad job of explaining what's going on. And I feel.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel it's doing a bad job. So even if it is intentionally misdirecting me, it's not letting me know that. Like, it's not alerting me to the fact that the writer has control over what's going on in the script. And it feels very jumbled by the end of it. And basing it on all the previous episodes that we've seen, I think I'm more likely to believe that it's just kind of a sloppy script than anything else at this point.
Yeah, I still feel like it had some of that stuff where it seems like they had their endpoints in mind and then they were kind of writing backward. Like that scene with the scene at the end with Saru and Burnham, I thought was pretty good. But again, it was like, I feel like they've wrote that scene first and then said, all right, how do we get to this point?
Yeah.
And the Klingon stuff didn't feel that. The Klingon stuff just felt really, it's like, it was like they had to put something in there for the Klingons and they just jammed a bunch of shit in there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird. I think one of the problems of having the serialized nature of the show is that you try to do too much to move too many things forward at the same time.
Right.
Even though the Stamets thing didn't take up a ton of time, I feel like it, I don't know, maybe I'm just trying to make excuses for why it's not put together well, but I didn't feel like there was enough time spent with the on the planet stuff versus, to make that stuff land. And there wasn't enough time spent with the Klingon stuff to really make that make sense.
Right.
And there wasn't enough time spent with the Stamets stuff to really have that be worth anything.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And there wasn't enough time spent with the battle at the beginning to really, I don't know. let's put it this way. I know you got to start your show. You got to do something exciting, right? But you could have saved yourself, you could have given yourself like 10 extra minutes of screen time to do more with your story if the first scene of your episode was Lorca talking to the Klingon guy, I mean the Vulcan guy. Because do you really need to see that battle?
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it's, if the conversation there is like, oh, well, these guys got killed, and well, we realize that we have confirmation that they have cloaking device, blah, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, it takes away an exciting space battle from the beginning of your show, but it's like, I don't know what you're really getting out of that sequence other than getting to this scene where they talk about how they have a cloaking device.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the opening it with the Vulcan ambassador hologram talking to Lorca about, like, you know, we've lost a lot of ships. It seems that all these Klingon ships now have cloaking devices. This is pretty bad stuff. So you better continue with your secret mission to Pavo. You know, which,
nothing that happens in that scene comes back later.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
that captain is dead. No, the ship doesn't matter. Apparently, they didn't rescue anybody.
The Klingons they were fighting aren't the Klingons that matter at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the something that's kind of weird about the combining the serialized nature with the non-serialized episodic nature of Star Trek is that when we have this war arc, which I think that they've just done a terrible job of selling this war to me. You know, the series is not doing a good job of explaining what this war is. And that's what makes scenes like the Tyler and Burnham when they're about to kiss scene make no sense, because he's like, we've been fighting this war a long time. It's been hard on everybody. It's like, I haven't seen it hard on anybody. Like,
yeah.
No one,
have you?
Yeah, right. No one said, he's the prisoner of war. Maybe he's had the hardest time, but we just met him basically compared to everyone else. And I haven't seen any real fights going on. There hasn't been any sort of like information to me, the viewer, of how the war is going for the Klingons. And the problem with the episodic standalone nature is that when they go to a planet like Pavo, right, and they have this interaction with this kind of alien where they, you know, they learn something new and it's a prime directive thing, yada, yada, yada. The problem is that in this war storyline, this seems like a huge deal. this planet, right? So yeah. It's weird that they just, like, they kind of stumble upon it. And it's just like an everyday away mission where it's like, yeah, we got to get to the top of Crystal Mountain and send out the signal. And it's like, if this is so important to the war effort, it's kind of like that previous episode where the Klingons attack the main dilithium mine and for some reason it's undefended in the Federation. Yes. So yeah. It's like all these huge events are happening, but I don't feel any impact of these scenes of getting to these planets. Like, this is not important in the episode's viewpoint.
Yeah, we have this thing that we've discovered that could potentially end the war, so we're going to send three people down to do it.
Yes, yeah, right, and not have the ship in contact with them for some reason so that they can back them up or anything. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and the war thing is just like, why haven't there been more instances of, you got to pick and choose the things you're going to show, but there's been no more instances of like dealing with any fallout from the war. It's not like the Discovery isn't being engaged with any civilizations or other planets that are being damaged.
Right.
You know, like they did that one time where they just showed up and kind of, you know, threw sparklers in the air and then fucked off. Right. But aside from that, I think that's the dilithium mine thing. But aside from that, there's been no indication of how anybody is being affected by this war other than people talking about being affected by the war in a very vague sense.
Yes, yeah, and it's interfering with their relationship status.
Did you ever see Rushmore?
Yes, the Wes Anderson.
Is that yeah, yeah. Do you remember the play, the Vietnam play that the kid writes?
No,
it's a really high school understanding of how war is.
Yeah,
where it's like it's that kind of thing where it feels like it's like two guys, a high school drama assignment of like two guys sitting in a foxhole just being like, man, the war, and the other guy's like, yeah, the war, the war. That kind of thing, you know, that's what it feels like.
And then they kiss. Yeah, that's basically the Tyler Burnham thing.
I will say, speaking of the Tyler Burnham thing, I did like the one bit of that I did like was when she talks about their relationship where she's like, well, when this is over, I'm going to go back to jail. I thought that stuff was pretty good.
I thought that was good because I actually didn't even realize that was a possibility.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and it was a nice character thing because like at this point, you forget she's a fucking prisoner.
Right.
Because she's just all, they've just swept that under the rug. She's just part of the crew now. So it was nice to bring that back a little bit. But again, I didn't like how he's like, well, what if the war never ends and we can just, you know, touch butts forever?
Yeah, I thought that the...
Fuck everybody else. Let's just keep this war going and let everybody die just because I like to hold your hand.
I thought that the trailer for this one last week made this episode look a lot different than what I got. I thought it was going to be more of a Saru exploration. I thought they were going to his home world, for one thing. I thought that we were going to get an insight into him a little bit. And it just doesn't land that way. You don't get any insight into Saru except for the fact that he seems to be very unstable for his position.
He can run super fast when the plot needs him to.
Yes, he can run... he can run 80 miles an hour or whatever they say. And it's just his I would say that the Klingon storyline is actually the A plot here in a lot of ways, because that seems to have the most impact on things going forward, even if it's confusing as it is.
Does it though? I mean, what?
Well, we know that
what did it do other than maybe kill the Admiral, but maybe not kill the Admiral and take Laurel off the board, I guess.
What do you think Laurel's plan is here? Like, what do you think her motivation, what she's trying to do actually is? Because I thought that her trying to get the Admiral, I thought that everything she's trying to do is trying to get her back in contact with Vok somehow on the Discovery. And it didn't work out that way. And at the end, she's captured, and I feel that, like, you know, if she's allowed to continue for the rest of the series, there has to be a good reason why she's not immediately killed by Kor, I think, because that seems a very Klingon-y thing to do. If, like, if you're a traitor to me and you've lied to me and I'm the leader of this empire, I should just kill you where you stand. There's been a startling lack of Klingons killing each other in this series, which is odd.
Yeah, and, I think that last scene... they kind of make things hard for themselves because of why have him like, even from a story standpoint, why have him be aware of what her plot is so quickly? Like, you know, because she pledges herself to Kor, and he, you know, she gets the face paint there. If you leave it at that, then you have the hanging plot thread of, okay, well, she's now, you know, kind of Peter Baelishing her way through this, where she's trying to stay right, on the good side, but also trying to work with the Starfleet or whatever. So that leaves it open to interpretation, or to the viewer to be like, oh, what's going to happen next? But I feel like they went for the shock ending where they had him be like, no, I am aware of what's going on. You're going to jail. And then at that point, like, okay, so great. Now she's in jail.
Yeah.
So if she's a Klingon, she probably should be killed on the spot.
Right.
And assuming she's not, okay, what are they going to do with her? Then now they got to figure out some fucking ridiculous way to get her out.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or they'll just pull a Lorca escaping from the ship, and she'll just be on a shuttle, like, flying off into Federation space, and they'll be like, that's good enough.
This weekend, where the fuck is the ship? It's kind of from, we know where the ship is this time, but we don't know where the Klingon ship is. But Laurel is like, we can get out of here, and I can get you back to the Discovery.
How? And immediately, well,
like the Admiral doesn't know where the Discovery is,
right?
I guess once they get out of there, technically she could find it, but
I mean, you'd have to assume they're a long way. Well, like, she got captured on some planet in some other section of the galaxy. Like, she's nowhere near the Discovery, and the Discovery can jump across, wherever it needs
and
to
also,
go.
And also, at that last scene with the Klingons, how does she know that the, like, is she lying to Kor when she says, I mean, she's not, because it's true, but how, when she says, it's been confirmed that they have some sort of, like, special drive. They say that, right?
Yes, yeah.
Does that happen? How does she know that? The Admiral never tells her that.
Well, she,
I don't think.
Doesn't she know that? She implies in the conversation, I think, where she's talking to the captive Admiral, she implies that they have the drive. I think they have that conversation.
Well, regardless, I'm not sure how she knows that, but maybe it doesn't matter. I'm missing something.
I think she knows. I'm pretty sure she knows that for some reason. I agree with you. I don't really understand why she would know that at that point. But, I mean, the Laurel thing will be tough to get around because, you know, if the Admiral's dead, it's one thing. If the Admiral is dead, I'd be shocked that she never comes.
I don't think she can be dead.
So if she's alive, where do they go from here? Like, if they're alive and they manage to write themselves out of this, I'll be very impressed with, like, whatever they manage to do. If this is all part of Laurel's scheme to get caught by Kor and imprisoned, and this is all going to amount to something, I'll be very surprised by that if that happens.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, they're they're taking a lot of shortcuts by using the idea of mystery without actually using mystery correctly. Because they're not showing you that the Admiral is alive, and so by doing that, I guess the thought is, well, you know, if we don't 100% prove that she's dead, she might be dead, but she might also be alive. But if she's alive, that means she's probably off the ship. But if she's off the ship, where the hell, you know, it's that doesn't really work for me, because then you've got, like, assuming she's alive and assuming she got off the ship. So does that mean, like, the next episode we're going to have a scene where she just, like, knowing this show, she's probably going to be on a Klingon space shuttle that just happens to show up where the Discovery is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess that doesn't matter because they're going to be within 12 feet of each other next episode anyway, because they got brought to the homing beacon. The Pavo blew their conch shell there and drew everybody. I don't know. It's confusing to me, and I don't think the storytelling is particularly good.
Are you all right?
I lied to you. I'm Lieutenant Tyler. I attacked you. I could have killed you.
You weren't yourself.
But I was. We are born afraid. We Kelpians. It's how we survive. As such, my whole life, I have never known a moment without fear. The freedom of it. Not one moment. Until Paavo.
I think we're going to have to wrap it up there, though. I think that we'll call it to a close here. Thank you guys very much. I'll play an audio clip, actually, and then we'll come back and I'll announce that. But we're going to, you can check out the social media, all that in the video description blurb below. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, support the show there, and all that. Sorry for the abrupt episode, but it's that kind of a night. And we'll be back next week with the final episode in the fall season, as they're calling it on Discovery. Into the Forest I Go, I think is the name of the episode. But anyway, Clay, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Guys, we'll see you next time.